everybody. Welcome to Revival Town Podcast. I'm Chuck Tate. That, of course, is the one and only Andy King.
You all right, mate?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's just good to get together. The weather's changing. It's warmer out. The sun is shining. The clocks have fast-forwarded. We get more daylight.
I know. Where you lived the other night, did you have that storm roll through?
It was actually early in the morning because I got up at 5. And when I got up, I received a text notification that there was a tornado warning in Tazewell County.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I live in Woodford County.
Yeah.
But
which is right next door.
Which is right next door. And it was still storming. But it was supposed to be really bad where there was supposed to be hail and things. But
hail?
Hail.
Oh, hail.
Oh, hail. So my wife, the hearing loss guy, there are certain words I can't say, and that's one of them, and she always gives me a hard time about it.
Really?
She's always giving me hell about saying, hey, don't help. I'm kidding. Well, she's going to be like, I can't believe you did that. There was supposed to be like a hellstorm.
Yeah.
And we didn't get that.
We live about, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes from each other, would you say?
Yeah, probably 15.
15, yeah. And there's a river in between.
Yeah.
And so...
The river runs through it.
River runs through it. Yeah, there you go. We had bad, like, thunder and stuff like that. And it wasn't hail, but it was rain. Remember, last year I got a new roof because of the hail.
Right, that's right.
If you have hail, I can give you the guy to get it done.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we actually had to do that at our last house. And the church, we have a new roof because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, do you still have your fish pond?
Yeah.
Yeah, really?
All right. Oh,
so
yeah.
They
survived the winter.
Oh, man. I'm going to come over and go fishing.
Yeah. And my dad lives at a street over, and we put a fish pond in his yard last year or the year before. And same. Didn't lose any fish with this minus 10 degrees or whatever it was.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. We have heaters, so we put a heater in.
Okay,
all right.
Good job.
That's good.
So you like fishing?
Love it, mate. Yeah. Now, in the conversation, because obviously we've already recorded the conversation that we're about to hear.
With our guest.
With Drew. He talks about fishing, and you start talking about going fishing, and you've never once invited me.
It's because I've only gone a few times. But yeah, my son's really into it now.
Yeah.
And so now... I go with him, and I've enjoyed it. It's been very relaxing.
Well,
so we're going to go.
We're going to go. You know what we should do? We should record the podcast on the side of the riverbank.
Oh, there you go. We can do
it. I think we could pull that off somehow.
Actually, right down where I live, there's a little spot. We can do it.
All right. We're going to do it.
There you have it, guys. Revival Town Podcast Fishing Edition.
What we'll do, we'll have Ashton on it with us.
Okay.
And we'll do like a generation gap between you and him.
Okay, all right.
No, but we could do, we'll talk to him about culture and his age group. And by the way, I can't believe I didn't bring this up. You were having a bit of a nervous breakdown this morning because it looks like the government are going to shut down TikTok.
I've even tweeted about it, man. I'm ticked. I am TikToked.
Yeah. Don't worry. Don't worry, you know, of all the things that are happening from China trying to get... Chuck's just upset because he's not going to be able to be on the platform anymore.
Oh.
The TikTok platform.
I am seriously upset about it. Because I've spent the last 3 to 4 years building that platform up and I'm connected with a lot of people on there, and I do live Bible studies in there.
Just tell everyone how many people follow you on TikTok.
12.
You thought you were Jesus, didn't you?
No. So, 99,000.
99,000.
Yeah, I'm close. Well, by the time this airs, it might be 100 because it's been kicking back off again. There was the algorithm changed, and I was stuck for a long time, But no, I have a little bit of a community that I love and built some relationships. We're going to talk to our guest about showing up. And I've showed up on TikTok every day almost for the last at least 3 years, every day just about.
Wow.
So I am a little bit upset about that. Let's close our borders. Forget TikTok. We're more worried about TikTok than we are illegal aliens. I'm all for reaching refugees. Jesus was a refugee. We love people, but we have to go about it the right way. I'm not just going to let anybody come into my house tonight.
Yeah. Well, you let me.
Yeah, you know, I know. I might get kicked out of mine for this conversation. Yeah. We'll see. No, I
agree. I mean, when I moved to America, there was a process. Right. It wasn't that I just showed up in Chicago and walked in. I couldn't do that. You know, there was a process for it. And I think that's where people forget. America welcomes many people.
Oh, yeah.
But there is a process to it.
Right. Anything goes.
Yeah.
Because then innocent people end up in trouble or dead.
Yep.
And crime becomes rampant. We've just got to, man, do things the right way. We'll love everybody that comes in, but let's get them in the right way.
Well,
and leave TikTok alone.
I told you, everyone.
Oh,
he was mad.
My goodness. That's hard to take.
Well, why don't you introduce our guest?
All right. His name is Drew Dick, and I connected with him not on TikTok, but on X, formerly known as Twitter.
By the way, sorry, totally, well, not off topic. I cannot get my account back on X.
What? I'll give you the password.
No, that's the problem.
No, I have it. I changed it. That's why you can't get in. What? No, I'm kidding.
For some reason, I have tried all my emails. I've got a few email accounts, and everyone says there is no account to this.
Really?
Yeah, but my profile's on there, like what I've liked, my image. Like, no one's gone in and hacked it.
So no one's changed anything?
No one's changed anything, but I cannot get on it at all. And I don't want to just start over because all of my other socials is Andy Britt. Mm. And I want to keep Andy Britt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
wow.
I'm going to help you. Okay,
all right. Figure it out.
We'll keep you reported on that, everyone. Okay. Right,
and maybe we can get Drew to help. So our guest today is Drew Dick. He's the author of Just Show Up. And I'm so glad that he showed up to hang with us today. I met him on the X platform. He sent me the book and I read it. I actually listened to the Audible version and I told you we got to have him on. And he's here today.
And great guy.
Good stuff.
What you didn't see was us running around 20 minutes before because the connections weren't working, and yet he was very gracious.
Yeah,
thank you, Drew. He stayed on. Like, sometimes people are like, okay, I'm gonna go. No, he laughed with us and got us rolling while I was unplugging and plugging cables. And so thank you, Drew.
Well, because we've been recording at the Dream Center, but today we're recording at Rock Church, so we had to, there was a new element of setting up preparation. So we made it, though.
We made it.
We
so
made it.
Why don't you sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation with Drew.
This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app.
All right, everyone, it's time for another conversation on Revival Town Podcast. Our guest today, Drew Dick, is an editor at Moody Publishers and the former managing editor of Leadership Journal. Drew's work has been featured in Christianity Today, Relevant, and CNN.com. He's the author of several books, including Your Future Self Will Thank You, Secrets to Self-Control from the Bible and Brain Science. His latest release is called Just Show Up, How Small Acts of Faithfulness Change Everything. We're going to talk to him about that right now. Drew, welcome to Revival Town.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. This is awesome. We're like Twitter or whatever they're calling it now, X-Friends.
X-Friends, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and so to actually see you and hear you is pretty cool.
It really is, and I've told Andy, you're one of my favorite people to follow just because you are hilarious. I love the tweets. In fact, you're one of our good friends. His name is Matt Brown, and he's been on the podcast before, and he's good friends with Daryl Strawberry, who had a heart attack a few days ago, and he's okay, but you posted a picture of you met with him, and I just love to... He said, it's always great to meet a celebrity, he said.
One person didn't understand that I was joking and said, man, you're pathetic. And I didn't disagree with that. But yeah. thank you for those kind words. You know, I don't get that affirmation at home. My wife doesn't think I'm funny. So when other people do, that's always affirming.
Oh, man. Yeah. I love it. I love your style of humor. So I told Andy, well, yeah, we got to get this guy on here. Of course, talk about the book, too. But why don't you begin by just telling us your story?
Yeah. Well, I should get this out of the way. I'm Canadian. Yeah,
I grew up in Canada. Okay. Oh, there we go.
Although I've been south of the border now for like 23 years. And so when I go home, they say I sound like a southern politician because I've completely lost my Canadian accent. So I grew up in Canada, son of a pastor. So I grew up in the church, you know, which is always a mixed blessing. But on the whole, I'm grateful for it. It was great just to get introduced to Jesus at an early age. My testimony is I wandered in sin for years. And then finally, at 5 years old, I broke down and accepted Jesus. But grew up in the church. And then, when I was, I was, you know, kind of almost a high school dropout. I was so bad at school. Was really only interested in playing basketball. Went to college on a basketball scholarship. Got there, sat on the bench most of the time, and realized I liked the school more than the basketball. So got into writing. Wanted to kind of had these vague aspirations to be a writer. Ended up going to seminary with zero vocational objectives, and then stumbled into being an editor and a writer. And basically, so I really love equipping pastors and just lay people in the church to live the Christian life to the fullest extent that they can, empowered, of course, by the Holy Spirit. And so I feel privileged. I still believe that God, even though our culture is so visual, that I believe that God still changes people through the medium of the written word. Yeah. And so as an editor and as a writer, that's kind of my mission. I get up every day and feel privileged to put on my pajamas because I work from home and do that work.
It's a long commute.
A long commute. That's right. And I have an awesome wife, Grace, and three children, one boy and two girls. And so they keep me busy and try to, you know, get into my office. So I'm glad I have a lock on the door.
Oh, nice.
For meetings like this. Yeah.
So everybody listening and watching that's on X, you need to go follow Drew right now. And you definitely bring up Grace and your kids a lot in your tweets and good stuff. So
thanks, man. Thanks.
Well, we're gonna dig into the book. And before we jump into it, just looking at your title, reminded me just a few years back at the Dream Center, we deal with a lot of teenagers and kids from the inner city, and we have a huge after school program with a trade school and all these different things, not just your typical after school program. We have carpentry and we have a barista course and a roasting course, all these different things. But I remember a few years back, I just felt like we needed to encourage people just to show up.
Yeah.
And because for the students that we're seeing, it's not really about the carpentry and the coffee stuff and the t-shirt printing and everything else we do. It's just that someone shows up so that they can talk to them or connect with them. And so when I saw just show up, it just took me back to that. It may not have anything to do with what I've just said, but for me, and just being reminded that sometimes someone just wants someone else to show up just to talk with and be there for.
Oh, man, that's everything. Yeah, and you're right, especially when it comes to like making an impact on kids. And I love that ministry, by the way. I talked to a friend recently, and he was talking about how he didn't really have a strong father figure growing up, and he'd shoot hoops outside his house. And every day this guy down the road would, you know, be pulling out to go to work, and he would just say, hey, man, you're a great basketball player. Just kind of a little offhanded, favorable remark. And he said just that little thing made a huge difference for him in his life.
Yeah.
And I think like a few years ago, I was mentoring these two 12-year-old boys. And I had all these grand visions of what it was going to be like they'd open up to me and we're going to have these deep conversations. And none of that happened because they'd just like look at me and I'd ask questions that answer with one word answers. And I was like, man, I am absolutely terrible at this because they just wanted to talk about video games and they weren't impressed that I'd played Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt as a kid. But then after, I remember the one time I dropped the kid off, he's like, you're coming back next week, right? And I'm like, yeah. And all of a sudden I realized like he didn't have a dad in his life. And I realized how important it was. And you're right. It's that presence, just being there. Even if you don't feel up to the task, even if you don't have the expertise, just showing up, especially when it comes to kids, man, that is everything.
You know, it was for me when I was in eighth grade, my family had just moved from Phoenix, where I was originally from, to central Illinois. And my dad took a staff position at a church and I didn't know anyone in the school. And my eighth grade English teacher, her name was Mrs. Barkley. And I just wrote about this in my next book that will come out in 2025. And she said, we had to do this little poem. Everybody had to write a poem. And she complimented me so much. And she said, Chuck, you're such a good writer. I mean, that's all I needed. I didn't know anybody, but my teacher believed in me. Right. And it really, I mean, it pushed me with my first book, with this one. I still hear her in those moments where I'm having doubts, like, can I really do this? That was so huge for me.
Yes. So was that type of thing, is that what sparked the book?
That's definitely part of it. You know, just thinking back to the people who made the biggest impact on me are not, you know, well-known, prominent folks. It's those people in your life, the teacher. I have a similar story about, like, my fifth grade teacher who just, you know, gave up his lunch hours because I was terrible at math to, you know, bring me up to speed. And the people who speak into your life at a critical juncture make such a huge difference. So that was a big part of it. And I think, too, something I stress in the book a lot is the importance of physical presence, right? And I realize the irony because we're talking through the internet right now, but there is nothing better than being there in person for people. And of course, as Christians, you know, we're following Jesus, who showed up, you know, God in Jesus shows up for us physically, right? He didn't just send a message to earth. He actually came, and when you look at Jesus's ministry, physical presence was so central to it. You know, he's touching diseased skin and disfigured limbs. He's letting prostitutes touch his feet and kids jump on his lap. And even when he's teaching, people are like pressing against him. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good thing to remember, especially today where we're all so, you know, connected through our digital devices. It can be easy to opt out of those relationships where you actually physically show up for people. And this is why the church is so crucial too, right? It's that last bastion of fellowship on earth where people are so isolated and alienated and lonely and anxious. And so it's more important than ever, not in a legalistic way, but I mean, like, to gather together and to be together as believers. So that, and it doesn't come naturally to me. And this is like a hard thing, because sometimes I'd like to just, like, hide out in my home office and jump on Twitter. But there's nothing better, especially when someone's, you know, in a hard season of life, showing up for them.
Right. In fact, you even mentioned in the book, just show up at church, even if you're late. And, you know, I saw some story recently on the internet, on Instagram or somewhere, everywhere, some viral post about somebody who was late to church and the pastor was slamming everybody for being late. But that person, it took everything within them just to show up, just to get there. Everything that they were dealing with that nobody else knew about it. That was bigger than anything else in that moment. So to be reprimanded for being late was ridiculous. It was so good that they showed up.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah, exactly. And I know that's hard sometimes for pastors. I'm not a pastor, so I get it. It's probably irritating when people are trickling in late and missing part of the service. But you're right. We don't know sometimes what someone's gone through, the hurdles they've overcome just to be there, especially when you're a visitor, man. Like, being like going to a church for the first time, especially, is a daunting prospect. You don't know anyone. You may be not sure if this is the right church, you know. So if they come at all, yeah, let's show a little grace. Or for people like me, and you got young kids, and it's like a massive battle every Sunday morning to get everyone into the minivan and drive the 20 minutes we drive to church. That's a heck of a thing. So yes, just show up, even if you're late.
That's good. That is good. So I have your book right here. And
you getting brownie points or what? I have the
Audible version.
Oh man.
You just jumped into my top three favorite people right there. Yeah. Two versions. I don't even think my mom did that.
And then I have the Kindle version. Let me pull it out.
Now you're just showing off.
you just alluded to this, but I still marked it and was wanting to bring it up. When you consider that God showed up in the flesh for us, it makes sense that we would show up for each other. And oftentimes, we don't think about Jesus being on earth as God showing up for us. A lot of people, it's really easy to look past that. But because of that, how much more should we be willing to be there for each other, to be present for each other? Like you said, Jesus was willing to be present even when the kids were bombarding him and the disciples were like, hey, he's busy. We got to get rid of these kids. And he was like, no, let them come to me. There's so much in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, we're people of the incarnation, so we need to take it seriously. Absolutely. And, this is another thing I talk about in the book, but like we endlessly debate what Jesus would say or do. Like, okay, would he, hold to this position or say this, or who would he confront if he was on earth today? And those are great questions and conversations to have. But one thing that I think is beyond doubt is that he would be with people. We know that. He'd be with hurting people. And so as followers of Jesus, we need to emulate his example.
Well, you wrote in the book about, and this may sound controversial for a lot of people, so that's why we want you to unpack this. But you say God doesn't call us to change the world. Can you unpack that a little bit? Because a lot of like you've just gone against probably every youth camp and convention. We're going to change the world.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to change
the world. Can you unpack that, though? I know where you're going to go with it, but I think it would be really, really good for people to hear what you're trying to convey through that statement.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when I say that, I think it's not on us, certainly in our own power to try to change the world. I don't think God's called us to that. And furthermore, it's a bit of a head trip. And I think I did imbibe a lot of these messages growing up in the church where it's like, man, you need to get out there and change the world for God. And then you kind of think it's all on your shoulders. And it's all, contingent upon your behavior, your determination. But I've changed my mind on that. Now, of course, it's God's job to change the world. He can do that. In fact, in a grand mystery, he chooses to use us to do that. But just as far as my spiritual and psychological health, it's easier to go, okay, I'm going to be faithful to what God's calling me to do. And also I'm going to kind of have a short-term focus and just go, God, what do you want me to do today? What's the next step of faithfulness in front of me? And then abandon the outcomes to him. He may use that in a way that I can't even fathom right now. It may be a broad impact, or it may be a deep impact on the people that are in my immediate vicinity, the people that I interact with. Either way, that's meaningful. Because I've just seen a lot of people, and I've been around long enough now where I see folks that are incredibly faithful, who love Jesus with all their heart, who dedicate their lives to it, and yet the scope of their influence may be rather narrow. And yet it matters. It matters now. It matters for eternity. But sometimes when we have this, like, I'm going to, change the world or be a voice to the nations, and then that doesn't pan out, you go, did I miss the memo? But man, look in scripture, look at the people who are quietly faithful. And in Hebrews talks about the people that didn't even see the result of their action, right? Because they died before it came. Yeah. That's my encouragement is, and I love, I talk about William Carey in the book, the father of modern missions, incredible guy, of course, a dude who definitely changed the world. And I love what he said, though. He said, I have no special talent, but I can plod. And he's the same guy who said, attempt great things for God. And I agree with that. But sometimes great things for God, from the world's perspective, look rather small. So faithfulness is success. That's kind of what I come back to.
And I think that is a message that so many people need to hear, especially in the age of, you mentioned college basketball. So now because of the portal, you have guys that have a little bit of success, and immediately they're going to look for the bigger school, the next, the better gig, more money. They want to bolt. So every year, everybody just goes to the portal instead of remaining faithful. And if they would just sometimes stick it out and build that team, they would probably go further. Then just jump and ship. There's something about that, I think.
And we're in a time too where you go on social media, we've talked about social media already and how it can be a fun way to connect, but there's this phenomenon where you see everyone else's life and it seems like everyone else is blowing up overnight and amazing things are happening. And when it comes to ministry, it's like, oh wow, God's using this person to do this incredible thing. And first of all, sometimes you're just seeing the highlights of that person's life, right? And then you kind of compare yourself to them and go, did I miss the memo? My encouragement to people is just stay faithful. Yeah. You don't know. God might have you on a different trajectory, a different plan, but that's not your job to monitor the outcomes and the metrics of your impact. It's to be faithful to God and let him do with what he wants through that faithfulness. That's good.
And that is good. So you mentioned plotting. And so what is the power of plotting for someone who's like, wait, I heard him say the word plotting. That sounds like a Tate Mates word, which is a little bit we do at the end of the show where Andy gives me a word that is known in the UK but not known here. And I always have to guess. Awesome. I always have to guess what it is.
And he never gets it right.
And I never get it right. But plotting seems like that would
plotting
be.
Plotting is a full-on English name.
Plotting. I could just hear your voice when, I was reading the book. Plotting. So, the power of plotting.
Sounds cooler when he says it, though, plotting. You know, with the English accent, it sounds kind of cool. Yeah. But yeah, it's not the sexiest word, right? Because it's a little boring and it's slow, right? That's the definition of plotting, that it's slow, but it's continuous. Yeah. And I think that's the power of it, right? Is that you keep going and all those little steps add up if you just stick with it. And back to William Carey, you know, I love the example that he is because, yeah, he did all these incredible things over time. But if you could zoom in on any given day of his life, you'd see a plotter. Like he had these open air services in India for 6 years, I believe, before he had one convert. But every day he just like get out the chairs, start preaching. You know, I mean, I would have given up after 6 months, maybe. Right. And but yet you have that continuous. And really what that is just obedience. It's faithfulness.
Yeah.
You're not looking at the outcomes. You go, OK, God's calling me to this. So I'm going to keep doing it. And he's and trust him to do something with it.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we're not doing it for the likes, right, or for the retweets, or for whatever.
Yeah, you touched on it earlier, and I want to go back to it just because you do talk about it in the book quite a bit about being physically present with people, the importance of that. Can you just unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I just think there's nothing, even if it's something small, right? Like someone's sick and you bring them the meal, or you're, you know, volunteering for nursery. So you're with the kids, and often just your presence. And then of course I apply this to parenting for people who are parents. It's such a huge principle because some people I know, like a lot of my friends who are dads as well, you always wonder like, okay, how am I doing? Right. And of course you can always do better, but you know, don't sell yourself short. If you're there with your kids, on the regular, first of all, if you haven't like left your marriage, abandon your kids, and you're not working 80 hours a week, but you're physically present, that will yield dividends over your child's life that you wouldn't believe. It just provides that baseline of psychological stability, right?
Yeah.
And if you're there and you're bringing them to church, I mean, doing those kind of things that seem kind of rudimentary or basic, but are powerful, that is absolutely huge. So I think sometimes or if we see someone in need and you think, oh, should I do something? But you're like, okay, well, I'm not really the right person to do something there. I don't know what to say, first of all. That's a big drawback, right? You think, okay, I'm not that eloquent. I don't have the words, or I don't have the expertise to help them. I don't really know what to do. Man, if someone's in pain, you just show up. Because if you think back about your own life, when you had the hardest times in your life, you may or may not remember what someone said to you, but I bet you remember one thing with perfect clarity, and that is who showed up, who was there for you. So yeah, just don't underestimate that power of presence, of just being there for folks.
Man, I think every parent who's listening and watching knows how true that is. I know myself, so I hate to say this, but up until recently, I had never, ever taken my son fishing. And somebody else took him fishing, and he loved it, and now he's all about fishing. And now he asked me to take him. And now I do take him. And we'll go together. And
wait, but you never take me fishing. What's the deal with that?
We go kayaking.
Well, yeah, true. Okay. Talk about being present.
Right, but you know, and throughout the years, we played basketball together. We did other things. But
we did not do that.
We did not do that. No.
Wrong ball for me. You got to kick it, not throw it.
I live in Andy's basement. Did I tell you that? He let me out to go spend time with my son. I told him, listen, I just read this book to show up. You're not letting me. Let me out. No.
Oh, man.
This is surfacing some issues for you. Yeah, right. Wow.
This is turned into a counseling session right now.
But anyway, it's been so good for us. And I can see what it does for him. I know what it does for me, but I can see what it does for him. And then I have a 19-year-old daughter, and there is times where just us riding together and listening to music together that she's into, yeah. and being present is so important. And you can even, whether it's friends or family or whoever, you can tell when somebody else is not getting that,
yeah.
and
yeah.
that hurt is there, and there's brokenness attached because. Yeah, they don't need all the other stuff. They need time. They just need.
Yeah, so true. No one grows up and is like, oh, my parents didn't throw me spectacular enough parties or take me to Disney enough. It's like, were they there, right? Did they spend time with me? Right. So, yeah, that is huge.
You know, and I think that, you know, for me, you know, so I've got three kids. Two are now married and living in L.A., and both the boys are out there. They got married within 3 weeks of each other. So it literally was, they got married and moved to LA. And then I've got a daughter, and Chuck doesn't know about this. I've got a daughter.
You have a daughter? No.
Oh my, I knew he was going to put in. I have a daughter, but she just come up to me just a few weeks ago, and she was like, Dad, we should start playing pickleball. And I'm like, and for me, you know, I've played different things over the years, never played pickleball. And for me, I'm going to play it, not because I want to play pickleball, but it's because it's something that Joy is wanting to do. And you know, we'll report back on that in 6 months as to how many leg cramps I get and things like that. But with the boys being gone, you now look back, and even though and they listen to the podcast, so they'll be able to answer this via text to me. But you know, I try to do as much as we could with them, whether it was you know, soccer or the musicians going to concerts. Like, we lived at concerts all the time. I got a lot of connections where I could get in for free as well. So they loved the challenge of that, like getting into a concert for free and backstage and all that side of it. But even for me, you still look back with regret, even though you did a lot of those things. There's always that, I could have done a little bit more. You know what I mean? So, and I guess I'm saying that just so that people don't beat themselves up so much, because they remember, like you said, they'll remember what needs to be remembered as far as the good times and what happened.
Well, Andy, we have your sons on the line, and Drew knows this, and we're going to bring them in.
Oh, man. That would be awesome.
Oh, no,
we're going to get their take now.
Yeah. You weren't there. No. that's good. Well, one of the things you also talk about in the book is about finding God's will with your feet. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
It conjures a strange image for some people. What I mean by that, you know, in growing up in the church, I heard some pretty unhelpful things about finding God's will. And usually it was kind of this mysterious process where you're like, okay, you got to read the tea leaves and kind of, you know, look for signs everywhere. And the expectation was that God was going to lead you in sort of an undeniable or supernatural way. And unfortunately, even though that happens, I don't discount that at all. It certainly happens. You look in scriptures, that happens. I know a lot of people for whom that happened. But for me, usually it's been a little more ordinary, a little more prosaic. And what I've kind of come to the conclusion of, most often God guides us. That is, he reveals his will for our lives as we obey him. Back to that faithfulness part, right? And so theologians talk about two kinds of callings. There's the common calling, and that is everything. That's like what every Christian is called to, right? We're all called to love the Lord our God. We're all called to love our neighbor as ourselves. It's not like if you're a Christian, you don't go, should I really love God? Should I really love my neighbor? No, you're called to that, right? Then there's the particular calling, which is, okay, what career should you have? Should you get married? If you should, to whom should you be married? Or where should you live? Those kind of specific calling questions. And those are the ones I find that we get weird about. And we like, you know, kind of flip open our Bible to random passages to see like what God's telling us to do. But here's what I think. If we focus on that common calling, on loving God, loving others, obeying what God commands, the particular calling has a way of coming clear. Yeah. I think that as we're faithful to God, he kind of lights the path before us. So that's my encouragement to young people, and actually older people too, because that was one surprise. I thought you figured out God's will for your life when you're 20 and then you're set, right? Here I am, I'm 46 and still figuring it out. So you need guidance as you go. But for me, it's just been encouraging to be like, okay, God, I'm gonna be obedient to you. I'm going to love people well. I'm going to follow hard after you. And I'm going to trust that you will reveal the particulars of my life as I go. So again, that's just something that's been really helpful for me, and I encourage other people to do. So yeah, find God's will with your feet. That is, as you walk, as you obey him, you'll find it.
Man, that's good. Well, what's a long haul hero?
Yeah, that's just someone, you know, I actually stole this from an author named Pete Davis. And he talks about, first of all, he contrasts it with what he calls infinite browsing mode. And that's the way we watch Netflix often. My wife and I were just doing this the other night. We're sitting there going, we need a new show. What should we watch? And we like burn an hour almost just looking at shows because we're unable to commit to one because there's so many stinking options.
Right. Every night.
Every night.
We burn so many hours just looking. Sorry, that got a bit too personal. No.
I know. I'm always in the basement going, pick something!
I'm doing it for half an hour until my wife finally gets sick and grabs the remote for me. And he talks about that's how a lot of us approach life because there are so many options, especially these days. And so we're unable to commit because we don't want to shut the door on anything. And he contrasts that with what he calls long-haul heroes. And that is people who commit to a certain place, a certain community, a certain vocation or calling, and they buckle down and they make an impact. And the danger, of course, of being stuck in infinite browsing mode is that you never invest enough. You never stay still long enough to actually make a difference. Mm. Whereas long haul heroes who invest deeply in their community and the people around them actually make a huge difference over time. And so that's my challenge. It's for myself too, because I'm one of these people that's kind of always looking for the next opportunity or where should we go or, you know, what transition can I make? But sometimes just looking around you, looking at the needs around you, investing deeply in people's lives is what ultimately makes the biggest difference.
Oh, this is a bit of a pet peeve of mine, just because of what I do within Peoria and really loving this city and this, you know, central Illinois area. I heard a pastor recently, and you know, I was talking to him, and he was like, I think I'll do like 5 years here and wait for the kids to get out of school, and then we'll go to a different city. And I was just sitting there like thinking, one, if your congregation heard that, who are committed to a city,
right?
And also, who wants to get behind someone who's going to take off in 5 or 10 years? Right. You know what I mean? Right. Like it's one of those things that I think there's a call in. Now I know, because this happened to me, there's seasons where God puts you somewhere for a season. And that is really a training ground, right? But to go into something saying, I'm only going to be here for 5 years, that's different, you know, and I totally get the long haul thing.
Yeah. I was just kidding, you know, when I said that. No. So Drew, I hey, planted.
He didn't use your name.
Oh, but I could.
So, the church that I pastor, my wife and I planted it back in 1998. So in 2 months, we'll turn 26 years old, and. Wow. We're not a mega church, but we love our people. We love our community. And this is where God has called me. And this is where I will stay unless he audibly speaks to me and says, I want you to go to somewhere else. Because and I love it. I really, I mean, I've traveled everywhere. I've been to every state in the U.S., but Alaska. And I love that. I love to travel and visit other places. But this is the people that God called me to, and this is something that I take serious. So that bums me out to even hear that was said.
Sure,
me,
sure.
That does it. But so I love that. I love that whole bit in the book. Long haul.
I love that because the average tenure of a pastor, what do they say, is like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So 26 years. That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, I've had a few people say to me, can you tell them to leave?
You're like, I'm just trying to get them out of my basement.
Well,
it's a good segue into talking about being a skate artist.
Yeah, yeah. You talk in your book about you confess to sometimes being an escape artist. What is that?
Oh man, yes. It sounds cool, but it's not. It sounds like Houdini or something. But what I'm talking about is checking out. And often the means by which I do that, I'm holding up, if anyone's watching the video, my phone. And this is a temptation when I'm around my kids and I'm kind of bored or irritated. It's like, I can just jump on my phone. And I developed this weird habit during the pandemic, actually, time when everyone was kind of stressed and maybe at home a lot, where I would start looking at houses on these real estate websites like Zillow and Redfin. And it was weird because we weren't really, I mean, kind of flirting with the idea of getting a different house, and our house is fine, right? But then all of a sudden, I was pretty discontent with my house when I saw these other houses because they were like a lot bigger and they had like home theaters and swimming pools. And all of a sudden, I'm like, how have I been happy in this house?
My wife does this. So when I was reading it, I was totally, totally thinking of her.
Yes.
Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. And in my case, it was actually my wife that snapped me out of it. Because one day as I was scrolling, you know, houses that were hundreds of thousands of dollars beyond her budget, she looks over my shoulder and she goes, what are you doing? We'll never afford a house like that. And I said, not with that attitude, we won't.
Into the doghouse you went. Into
the doghouse, exactly. And the problem was, I mean, there was a little bit of materialism, I guess. But I think the bigger problem was that I was just using it to check out because it was like a little, I don't know, escape hatch for me. And I was, it's embarrassing to say, I was spending sometimes hours a day on these stupid apps, checking out of my life. And I just challenge people, like, that's something that prevents us sometimes for showing up for the work God calls us to do, for the people around us, is that we have some way of, like, and it might, for people, it's different things, right? It might be like playing Call of Duty till 3 a.m, or it might be some unhealthy or even sinful habit that's pulling you away from people. And I just challenge people in the book to kind of take a hard, clear-eyed look at their life and go, where am I escaping? Because it also might be an indication that I'm not slaking those deeper needs with Jesus, with turning to Christ, with you know, nurturing that vertical connection with God. And sometimes when we're missing that, we seek out all these other stupid diversions like Redfin to fill that hole. And so, it's I think a signal to be more attentive to your spiritual life, and to make sure that you aren't checking out on the people around you.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah, that is good. Well, I think there's one problem that, and it has definitely increased since COVID, but so many people struggle with anxiety today and depression. In fact, at my son's school, so he's a sophomore in high school, and every student gets 5 mental health days a year at his school. No questions asked. It's excused. If it's a mental health day, you get 5. Or if you're struggling. And so many young people, and it's not limited to young people, so many people in general struggle.
You know, you could call them fishing days.
Sorry. Well, they are fishing days, yeah, for us. I have to show up.
Yeah, yeah.
But no. But in the book, you share your own struggle with an own battle with anxiety. I think everybody has had to battle that at some point, myself included. But why don't you share with us how that struggle, what it taught you about the importance of just showing up?
Yeah, no, totally. I was just thinking, man, I wish they had that when I was a kid. 5 days off, I would have abused that, though.
Right, exactly.
Sorry.
And we went no matter what. Nobody wanted to be there, but you went.
No, right. It didn't matter. Yeah. It was in my 20s. I was in seminary when I had my first battle with anxiety, is having panic attacks. I didn't know what they were at the time, but, you know, looking back, that's what they were. And since then, it's been a periodic struggle for me. And a few years ago now, I was at a particularly low point. It was actually over Christmas, I remember. And it was so bad, I was having a hard time sleeping. The only silver lining was I lost like 15 pounds. But I was pacing around my house, just in a really bad place mentally. And it's funny, I don't know whether it's being a dude or not, but sometimes when I'm in that place, I don't want to tell anyone. You know, it's just like, no, I'll figure this out. I can solve this on my own. But my wife, Grace, let my brother know, who lives about a half an hour from us. And I remember he texted me and he said, man, I'm showing up at your house in 30 minutes. And he picks me up in his car and he says, this is what we're doing tonight. We're going to go buy a whole bunch of jackets at Costco, coats. It was a really cold winter.
I love this.
And we're going to hand them out to the homeless in downtown Portland, because I live just very near Portland. And that's what we did. But I realized that his little mission had more to do with helping me, honestly, than the homeless. And it was exactly what I needed, because I needed to, first of all, get out of the house. I needed to think about other people who had bigger problems, frankly, than me. And I needed to hang out with someone else. And I just thought about that after. And I thought, man, like, none of that would have happened had my brother not physically shown up at my house. And so the first thing I think that it's taught me is just the importance of community and physical presence, again, of being with people. Because when you are, if you struggle with a mental health issue, I mean, the worst thing, and it is unfortunately an impulse that I have, is to kind of seclude yourself and try to solve it on your own. But man, you Lone Rangers are dead rangers when it comes to this topic. You need community. You need family. You need friends. You need the body of Christ. And so that's one thing that that I've learned the hard way, honestly, because at first, when I first had my battles with anxiety, it's weird. I was at seminary, but I thought, I'm getting enough Bible. We don't need to go to church. And we weren't really plugged into a church. Didn't have close friends. And so when it hit me, I was kind of all alone. Whereas now I have a stronger network, and that makes a massive difference.
Wow. And then the third thing you learned was you need to wear a coat.
That's right.
But I really did. I love that story. It's so cool that your brother was willing to do that, willing to say, nope, this is it. Go. You're coming with me. And we all sometimes we just need that little kick, all right? That little push, nudge. And I know we probably have people watching right now and listening. They're struggling maybe with being present, and they need somebody to show up in their life, or maybe God's dealing with them to show up in somebody else's life. Can you take a moment and just pray for those who are watching and listening that are struggling?
Absolutely. Dear Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation. I thank you that the only reason that we show up for each other is because you showed up for us. In fact, there's nothing that you ask us to do that you haven't done for us. And so I thank you for the example of your son, of being physically present, of loving us in person. I pray that we would follow his example. And I pray that through the power of the Holy Spirit, you would equip us to do that, because honestly, sometimes it's too much for us. Yeah. And for anyone who's discouraged too, Lord, I pray that you would encourage them to just take the next step of faithfulness in front of them, knowing that you are superintending their life, that you are in control. And so I pray you just encourage them, even if they're in a hard or discouraging season, to follow you and to trust you. Yes, and we pray this in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you.
Man, well, Drew, thank you so much for your time today. We would love for people who are listening or watching that would be able to connect with you. What is the best way of getting the book, connecting, that type of thing?
Yeah. Well, the book is on a little website from the Northwest here called Amazon.com.
Oh,
yeah, you probably haven't heard of it, but then as far as connecting with me, I spend too much time, frankly, on X.com. So if you want to connect with me there, that's great. Also, I'm in the Northwest, so if you're floating through town, just drop by, show up in person, and we'll go to Powell's, the best bookstore on the planet, which is in Portland. Yeah, wow. Grab a coffee, you know. So yeah. That's how to connect with me.
Man.
Brilliant.
You're stealing Andy's questions for the big three.
Probably. You do. Yeah. It's coming. Don't worry. That's good. Do you have a website as well? Or?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I should mention. It's just my name, Drew Dick, and it's D-Y-C-K is my last name. And you can see some cheesy pictures of me and the family on there. You can read a free chapter from the book. That kind of thing. And there's a way to contact me as well.
Yeah. So we want to encourage everybody watching, listening, go get the book. Just show up at your bookstore or show up at Amazon.com. Check it out.
Look how you did that. Transition. Yeah.
That was smooth.
Yeah, smooth. we always do the big three questions at the end of every show. Yeah,
these are the important questions.
Yeah. These are the questions everyone's wanting to know. So, Chuck, I think you start this week.
Okay, all right.
So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
So, my first question is, you mentioned that you had a college basketball scholarship, and we're usually 2 to 3 weeks out. So, by the time this is airing, March Madness will be upon us. The madness will be upon us. Is there a university or a college that you are rooting for?
Got to go Gonzaga because I'm technically, you know, I'm across the river from Portland, which is actually Washington. So that is the closest team that stands a chance to win. So the Zags will be my team. Although I don't follow college basketball until March Madness. And then I get in there and I fill out a bracket, which is busted immediately. And I never win. So, yeah.
Right on. Cool.
Okay. My question. So last year, me and my wife took a journey to Astoria, which is where Goonies was filmed and Short Circuit and all that. It was an awesome trip. Landed and went through Portland and everything. My question to you, though, is outside of Portland, where are you visiting along that coast?
Oh, man. Well, it's funny you'd mention Astoria because we're going tomorrow. Yeah, that's right. Tomorrow we'll be in Astoria. Oh, wow. We're going to hit the coast, as we call it. We don't call it the beach up here.
Right. So this is,
you know, the beach is an LA thing.
Yeah.
In Oregon, it's the coast because it's beautiful, but it's miserable and windy and rainy. Yeah. So you just look at it anyway.
But Cannon Beach is amazing.
Cannon Beach.
Oh, man.
It's gorgeous. It's got that huge rock sitting out in the water. And then Seaside is a little more commercial. But when you got kids like I do, they love it because there's like the carousel and the bumper cars and the Laffy Taffy and the restaurants and stuff. So we love Seaside as well.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. Well, I for the first time ever in the Big Three, I have two basketball questions.
Oh, awesome.
So then are you a Trailblazers fan? Who do you vote? Who are you for in the
office?
Long-suffering.
Who are you voting for?
Long-suffering. I'm voting for the Blazers, but I don't think my vote's going to do anything because they can't seem to pull it together. Ever since we passed on Michael Jordan for Sam Bowie, I think, we've had bad luck. So the Blazers haven't won in my lifetime, okay? So it's an act of faith. It's a tool of sanctification. To cheer for the Blazers every year. But yes, I am a Blazers fan.
All right. Good stuff.
Well, we're Bulls fans where Michael Jordan did go to rub it in a bit. Yeah,
so I am a Jordan fan, but I'm actually a Suns fan, a Phoenix
Suns
fan.
That's right. Yeah, nice.
Oh, man, I was a huge Jordan fan. Yeah, huge Jordan fan.
My favorite player of all time, though, was Bird, Larry Bird.
Jordan?
But
Over Jordan.
Bird's my favorite player, yeah.
Wow.
He's pretty good.
I think Jordan's the best of all time.
Yeah.
But Bird's my favorite.
Favorite.
Underrated passer, by the way, too.
Pardon?
Incredible passer.
Yes.
Bird, yeah, underrated passer.
Very much so.
People think of the shooting, but man, the guy was pretty smooth.
I thought you said underrated pasta. I was like, he was a pasta? That's amazing. Wow.
That would have been a twist. That would have been cool.
Well, we're mid-major people here because... at least I'm a big Bradley fan, and they didn't make it. They'll probably get invited to the NIT, but I know that Drake and Indiana State are probably going to get there, so we'll be rooting for whoever the mid-majors are. Of course, Gonzaga's, they're considered a mid-major, but we're really consider them a major.
Yeah, no, that's, neither is going to win, but that's okay.
But Illinois is looking good, though.
Yeah.
We're rooting for them. But anyway.
Good.
Well, Drew, I want to thank you so much for coming on to Reviver Town Podcast today. Everyone, make sure you go and check out Drew's book and connect with him. And if you're going through Portland, stop by. He's got a bookstore to take you to.
Yeah, it's a coffee.
But thank
it's
you.
It's a plan.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Seriously,
thank you, guys. This has been a blast.
All right. Thank you.
That was great.
Oh, man.
It really was. I enjoyed that. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I know that will not be the last time that we will hear or see from Drew.
Yeah.
It was just like talking to a friend that we've had for years. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Just right away. Good.
Good what?
Connection. Camaraderie. I was going to say. Camaraderie.
Wow.
Hellstorm.
Oh, thank you, Drew. Oh man. Okay.
All right.
Well, you know what is next, don't you?
It is Tate is Make Canadian Version today. No, kidding.
I was going to say, I did not get ready for that. So why don't you explain what Tate is Make while I find my word?
All right. This is the portion of the podcast where Andy, who is from the UK. What's up, mate?
That's fine.
So this is where he is going to give me a phrase, a word, rhyming Cockney slang, something that is well known in Britain or the UK.
Yep. And you liked last week's.
I like last week's Kip.
Kip.
I'm taking a Kip. I've taken a lot of Kip since I've learned about the word Kip. Kip is a nap. And when I leave today, I'm going to take a little bit of a Kip.
There you go.
You know, I love my Sunday afternoon Kips too.
Oh, yeah.
But so, yeah, I'm Tate, so I've got to guess the word.
So today I've got one, and I'll put it into context, okay?
Okay.
This, just before we were able to connect with Drew, and we connected, but things weren't working, and I was a bit miffed.
You're a bit miffed.
I was a bit miffed.
I would say...
M-I-F-F-E-D. Miffed.
Constipated? You weren't ready for that. No. We've been praying about that.
After that Chinese, I wasn't constipated.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, man. Oh. So, well, I was going to say ticked, but you didn't see ticked. You seemed a little bit anxious about it. Not anxious, but probably like trying to figure it out. But I'm going to go ahead and say ticked. Miffed, ticked. Is that the same word?
You're on a roll.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Because okay. You got last week's, right? Kip. You did get Kip.
I got Kip. I got Ooh, Kip, and now I got Miffed. Man.
That's wow. Two in a row.
Yeah, two in a row.
Oh, mate. Yeah,
Miffed. You're going to be Miffed, then I'm going to go home and take a Kip.
I'm a bit miffed that you got that. But there we go. Yeah. You know right what on. I mean? Well, thank you again, Chuck.
Thank you.
We love doing this. Make sure you stay tuned. You never know. One of these weeks, we will do it from the riverbank.
Yes, from the Outer Banks.
The Outer Banks. Yeah. All right. By the way, I saw they started recording Outer Banks next season.
It's coming up.
Come on. Yeah. Okay, everyone.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Revival Town Podcast today. Make sure that you are letting people know about the show and tell them to listen every week. You can also watch it as well on YouTube.
Yep. Every Monday.
There's that Chinese.
Someone else is castipated over here.
All right, thank you for watching. See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, my God.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Revival Town Podcast. Make sure you're following us on social media and remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, head on over to revivaltownpodcast.com.